Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, sponsored by EarthX, the world's largest environmental experience, and also sponsored by Natural Awakenings Magazine. Live your healthiest life on a healthier planet. Now here's your host, Bernice Butler.
Welcome to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. We are now in our fifth season, and we remain just as excited as ever to continue to help you explore and understand that unbreakable relationship between your health and the health of the planet. Here we look at the hottest topics related to our environment and its sustainability and how they affect your health and wellness. Here, issues like climate change, plastic pollution, extreme weather events, and others will meet up with everyday impacts like allergies and asthma, digestive issues and gut health, cancers, lung, heart issues, and more. So listen in today as we interview experts for today's show in our series on waste and waste management. And today we're focusing in on zero waste and the economics of waste and waste management. Now, do you ever wonder what happens to the things that you throw away? Where do they go, and how do they impact the environment and your health? Moreover, have you ever considered the financial toll of buying and disposing of things that you don't truly need or use? Well, today we're going to be delving into the realm of zero waste and the intriguing economics of waste management, exploring questions that affect each and every one of us and our life and our well-being on this planet. Now, in the hustle and bustle of everyday lives, it's very, very easy to overlook the profound consequences of our actions. Picture this. Every plastic bottle, disposable bag, every gum wrapper, pasta bag, or broken child's toy we discard daily. Now imagine the collective impact of these small and seemingly inconspicuous choices on our environment and our health. It's actually a staggering reality that we often overlook. Now, zero waste is more than just a catchy phrase. It's a lifestyle, a movement, and a necessity in our rapidly evolving world and economy. And our guests today are experts in this field, and they're going to help us unpack and unravel the intricacies of zero waste and delve into the economics of waste management. But before we get to our guests, let's ponder the gravity of the situation, actually. So today, we're not just talking about trash cans and recycling bins. We're going to be talking about a goal and a principle, again, zero waste. And this principle aims to minimize the amount of waste sent to landfills, sent to incinerators, and the ocean, while at the same time maximizing the reuse, recycling, and composting of materials. It's not just good for the environment. It's also beneficial for the economy and society, saving resources, energy, money, creating jobs, and perhaps most importantly, improving health and well-being. So waste is not only a problem, it's actually an opportunity also. Waste causes pollution, greenhouse gas emissions, it causes climate change, health risks, and social inequities. However, it can also be transformed into valuable resources, products, and services, generating income, savings, and social benefits. So today we're going to dive into the economics of waste management also, studying how waste is generated, how it's managed and valued in different contexts, and understanding the cost and the benefits of various waste management options, i.e. prevention, reduction, reuse, recycling, recovery, disposal. All of that is very crucial. As an example, according to the latest UN report, the world generated a record 53.6 million metric tons of e-waste in 2019, and that's electronic waste, with a projected increase to almost 75 million metric tons by 2030. Now, electronic waste is one of the most valuable and the fastest growing waste stream globally. It contains precious metals and materials that cannot be recovered and reused. And so recycling e-waste or electronic waste not only mitigates environmental impacts, but it also creates jobs, income, and social benefits. Now, when resources are produced and used in ways that lead to their disposal as waste, then the loss of these resources is an economic loss. When resources can be saved, when they can be reused, recovered, or used more efficiently, then that's a net economic gain. And so waste really is part, an integral part, of the economy. It is a byproduct of economic activity by businesses, by governments, and by our own households. Waste is also, of course, an input to economic activity, whether through material or energy recovery. And the management of that waste has economic implications for productivity, for government expenditures, and, of course, for the environment. A firm's decision over how to manage waste impacts on their profitability and the decisions of we as consumers in demanding goods and services, which lead to waste, impacts not only the environment, but also the level of government spending, which, of course, we fund, that's required by local authorities to collect and to manage all of our household waste. So economics provides a framework to help us think about when intervention by government is necessary, as well as what type of intervention is necessary, and ensuring that the amount of waste is reduced to the economically efficient level and is optimally managed seems to be critical to our environment, to our health, and to our pocketbooks. So let's get started. Let's unravel some of the complexities of zero waste and the economics of waste management. And here today to help us unpack and explore some of this are some experts who are going to make us smarter. We have with us today Ruth Abbey. Ruth is president of Zero Waste USA and a zero waste practitioner for more than 25 years. Her experience and her areas of expertise are in recycling and composting and facility development, as well as outreach and technical assistance. As president of Zero Waste USA, Ruth is working with municipalities across the U.S. to develop the social and physical infrastructure to achieve zero waste. She also has expertise in organics, in waste audits, facilities, and collection procurement. Welcome, Ruth. And did I get all of that right?
Yes. Hello. Thank you so much. And I appreciate being here today.
Thank you so much. Our other guest is Gary Liss. Gary has almost 50 years experience in recycling and waste management. He's a leading advocate of zero waste and is a founder, past president, and honorary board member of the National Recycling Coalition. Gary is a principal of Zero Waste Associates, which specializes in developing zero waste plans. He is also vice president of Zero Waste USA and chair of the certifications committee of the Zero Waste International Alliance, as well as coordinator of the Recycling is Infrastructure 2 campaign. Welcome, Gary. And did I get all of that right?
Yes. And thanks for having me here.
And again, thank you all both for taking time to join us today. So I want to start out with you, Ruth. Can you give our listeners a fairly simple definition of zero waste that they can identify with? And what are the primary goals and objectives of the movement? And how can we quantify it?
Sure. Well, I think most folks are familiar with the term, the three R's: reduce, reuse, recycling. And so in the most basic sense, that's really what we mean by zero waste. But I do think it's worth having listeners know about the that there is an international peer-reviewed definition of zero waste that has been curated by the Zero Waste International Alliance. It's very short, so I'll just read it one sentence. Zero waste is the conservation of all resources by means of responsible production, consumption, reuse and recovery of products, packaging, and materials without burning and with no discharges to land, water, or air that threaten the environment or human health. So I think you can hear the reduce, reuse, recycle in there. And then we add in basically no burn, no bury, and no impacts to the environment.
Indeed, because, you know, I remember years, well, I don't remember, I wasn't here that long, but years back, you know, we just kind of threw it out, and some people threw it out of the yard and burned it. And all of those things were, we didn't think about the environmental impacts then. So I think it's really good that you do outline that without the burning and the other things that may create air pollution. But it's basically trying to eliminate waste in our society, getting to zero waste. Some think that's impossible, but I think it's quite doable and quite necessary. So thank you for that. And we just have a couple of minutes to go before we go to break, so I'm going to stay here with you, Ruth, for a moment. Could you tell us just really briefly about the primary goals and objectives of Zero Waste USA?
Yes. Essentially, we work across the country to support communities, businesses, and institutions on the road to zero waste. And we do that with several different programs. We have an education program to bring both activists and professionals in the industry familiar with the terms and the methods and the processes for helping communities, businesses, and institutions achieve zero waste. We also have affiliation program for zero waste organizations and grassroots organizations to help them form in their local communities, to help them work with their local residents and businesses on these issues. So we welcome folks to join us in the movement. It's spread all over the country. We have several hundred folks that are involved in our programming and over 30 affiliates throughout the country.
Ruth, how can just ordinary folks in their everyday lives connect or impact with or be impacted by Zero Waste USA?
You can, of course, reach out to us through our website, zerowasteusa.org, O-R-G. And we have a lot of programs for just regular old folks. But I think what really is important is to just look what's going on in your everyday lives and in your everyday community to see where we can make a difference. We can all sort of look around us and see what kind of extra stuff we have. Are we buying things that we don't need? Are we buying things with extra packaging that we don't need? But of course, at Zero Waste USA, we don't think that the burden should be on the individual. Really, we were working towards systematic change through new programs and policies in our communities, state and federal legislation, and economic incentives for businesses and residents to do the right thing.
Indeed. Thank you so much for that. We're going to go ahead and go to break now, and we'll be right back on the other side with Ruth Abbey and Gary Liss. Thank you. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, the Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, all central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more, and we are told with the best Christmas trees in Texas. Check them out. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 38 years with a holistic approach, non-mercury, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today, to our show on waste and waste management as we focus in on zero waste and the economics of waste and waste management with our experts, Ruth Abbey from Zero Waste USA and Gary Liss. Again, thank you all so much for being with us today. And so I want to start this segment out with you, Gary. Give us a definition or tell us, what is circular economy? We hear about that so often. And what is the difference or the connection between zero waste and the circular economy that we hear so much about when discussing waste?
Great question. The Ellen MacArthur Foundation is a key group promoting the circular economy. And the way they define it is that everything is either a technical nutrient to be returned to the economy or organics to be returned to the land and nature. They consider materials that go to landfills or incinerators to be, quote, leakage. And that's very complementary to what we were advocating for with zero waste. As Ruth highlighted, we really are saying there's a bright line that burning materials is not acceptable. And by burning, we mean anything over 212 degrees Fahrenheit is what we're saying. Technologies that are thermal in nature are of particular concern. To be recognized as being a zero-waste facility, company, or community, the Zero Waste International Alliance came up with a goal that 90% of all the materials generated at a community, a facility, be diverted from landfills, incinerators, and the environment. And the 90% came from our earlier discussions where we said zero waste is all about zero emissions to air, water, and land, but to be recognized as a leader, it's zero waste or darn close.
All right. I like that. So would you say that the circular economy movement or that term is a subset of zero waste? Because I understand a circular economy is basically reusing everything such as there's no waste of it left.
Yeah, definitely consider it a subset. That zero waste sets a firmer line about not burning materials. It's considered leakage, but it's not in the vernacular of Ellen MacArthur, but it's really a firm statement in the definition of zero waste.
Ruth, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, yeah, exactly. One way to think about it is that the circular economy wants to keep materials in circularity, and that is a subset of zero waste, which is all about reduction. Rethink, reimagine, you know, not even entering the materials into the system, right? Mm-hmm. So we definitely think that circular economy is part of the system, but as a subset, because we know that we don't need all of the packaging and products that come into our lives. And so reducing the materials flowing into the first place, and once we get them, keeping them in circularity is so important.
Indeed. So we could say that if we can achieve the circular economy, that would help to achieve zero waste because you're using it.
Exactly.
So there's not any waste to it. Yeah. I like that. I wish, though, that they could come together better, perhaps, so that there won't be misunderstandings. You know, that's probably one of the things that encouraged us to start Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio, was to try to explain to everyday people in their everyday lives why this is important. And that starts with educating them. And in many instances, there's a lot of terms out there that they don't understand. And what I've learned from way back in my days of a stockbroker, our boss used to always tell us, if people don't know what you're talking about, they're not going to ask you. They're just not going to buy what you're selling. And I think that applies as well to these environmental issues. You know, they don't know what you're talking about. Many of them don't bother to go and ask. They're just like, oh, that's not for me. It's not anything I have to listen to. So that's kind of why I'm belaboring this point of a circular economy and zero waste. They are kind of glued together at the hip and facilitate each other. So and that's a good thing. But I do love it that you all are making that big deal of no burning, because of that, when it's burned, that just creates a whole nother environmental issue of air pollution, which is one of our biggest issues. So, again, thank you for what you do. So I want to ask you, though, Ruth, what are there and what are they the social and health benefits associated with reducing waste?
We know that with incineration, by burning our materials, that creates really harmful chemicals, dioxins and furans and particulates. And I'm here in California, and here in the Central Valley, we have a terrible health crisis with regards to asthma and other things. And we have one of the last remaining incinerators here in the Central Valley that is only contributing to the poor air quality in that area. So that's number one. Number two, with regards to landfilling, landfills are one of the number one emitters of methane gas, which is a powerful greenhouse gas pollutant. Essentially, because of that, it recreates the global warming greenhouse gas effect. So with landfilling creating methane, that is another huge impact, both socially and environmentally, because it will, as you know, the climate, we're going to be burning ourselves to death and then drown because of sea level rise. So, you know, we have to make a tremendous effort in reducing the impacts of climate change.
And there's an in-between with that, Ruth, too, and that is those of us with allergies, and it seems like that number is growing exponentially every year, we're going to be put on the side and not able to function because of some of the things in the air. Now, and this is kind of a taking a sidestep, but with landfills, is there any legislation or any emerging movements to just get rid of them all?
I would highlight that landfills in Europe are regulated much more stringently than landfills in this country. We have a problem in this country that the regulators regulate the landfills and get input from the landfill owners. And most other people are not at the table. We have a system that's really weak in how landfills are regulated. And what we need to do is upgrade and improve the regulations. In Europe, they have, since 1999, a landfill directive that was all about phasing organics out of landfills, getting the organics out, because the organics are what decompose into methane gas and create the greenhouse effect that Ruth was talking about. In Europe, they're now considering upgrading their regulations even further. And there's some great studies out that highlight what needs to be done to be more careful about all of that. So in terms of landfilling, landfills are currently poorly regulated and need to be held to a higher standard. We can do that contractually. We don't need the regulators to change the regulations, although that would be good, but that would take years. Just contractually, when a community or business goes to a landfill, they can say, I want my stuff to go to a landfill that has higher standards than are currently required by law. And that's part of the key transition going forward. But landfills by themselves are better than incinerators. In Zero Waste International Alliance, we say if the landfills are meeting EU regulations, the European regulations are better, they're preferable to incinerators.
Is there any type of air quality testing around landfills? And the reason I ask that is very personal. As I drive down the street, I may not look up and see the big hill, but I can smell it. My eyes begin to water, and then I look around. Oh, there it is. I'm smelling it, and it's affecting me with my allergies and my sensitive nose. And that's why I was asking, is there any type of air quality regulation? Ruth, you want to weigh in on that really quickly? We only have a couple of minutes to go in this segment.
We do have federal legislation, Subtitle D, that requires sanitary landfills to be covered daily to reduce those impacts of air quality. As Gary pointed out, it's really that the organic material, the food scraps, and the other things that go to landfill that are the problem. And if all we had were the inert materials, you know, the concrete, asphalt, a little bit of wood going to the landfill, the materials that we don't have a solution for, like composite materials, if we just had a little bit of that 10% of leftovers going to the landfill and the organics were out, it would be compatible with our environmental goals. Because, you know, we do have these legacy materials in our households that we can't, you know, there's nothing we can do with. They're not recyclable, they're not compostable, and they are potentially not reusable. So we do need landfills as a temporary solution while we get to that road to zero waste.
Okay, we just have 1 minute to go to break. Gary, briefly?
Yeah, just to highlight, if you don't like the smell, complain. One of the key ways of impacting landfill odors is if they get a lot of odor complaints, then there are regulations in place with air quality districts or other regulatory agencies that will come out and check it out and try to quantify it. One of the key ways they quantify is how many complaints have there been.
We need to go to break now. We'll be right back on the other side with Ruth Abe and Gary Liss. Thank you all.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today, to our show on waste management, where we're specifically focusing in on zero waste and the economics of waste and waste management. And we are back with Ruth Abbe and Gary Lisk with Zero Waste USA, and they are making us smarter. So I want to start this segment with you, Ruth, and talk to us about how zero waste and its effectiveness can benefit the environment, and give us some examples.
Right. Yes, of course. So we can see an immediate change in our environment just by, you know, simple changes like reducing single-use plastics in our litter, right? So we work with movements across the around the world on breaking free from plastics. And it's the plastics that you can see that pollute our waterways, our neighborhoods, and our oceans. So by reducing single-use plastic, you can immediately see in your neighborhoods a reduction of impacts. We were in Italy on a lecture tour. It was amazing. And one of the things that we talked about was looking down on the ground and seeing all the litter of cigarette butts. And sometime after that, we were meeting with children, and we were like, well, one thing you can do to reduce impact, reduce smoking, maybe encourage your parents to stop smoking, right? And then immediately, several months thereafter, the Italian government put a restriction on the littering of cigarette butts. And so there's a lot less in the environment in Italy. So there you go. There's an immediate example. But just to say that both when what we see and what we don't see, so the materials that we have that come into our lives are extracted from the environment. They come from mining. They come from harvesting of timber. And by reducing our impact, we reduce that extraction technologies, right? So there's an immediate, preservation of nature, preservation of the environment, reduce impact to the oceans. So we not only see the reduction of impacts in our neighborhood, the visual impact of waste, but we can reduce it in our environment as well and have a more healthy, sustainable world.
And so where is the intersection of waste and waste management with climate change?
Right. Great question. So we actually have statistics on that. The U.S. EPA does a review of what emits greenhouse gas, right? And the traditional way of looking at it, only about 3% is attributed to waste and waste management, essentially landfilling and incineration. But if you look at the entire system from a system-wide view, you can see that the provision of food, the provision of materials, the extraction of resources, if you take those into account and you look at greenhouse gas emissions from the system-based view rather than the production-based view, as much as 42% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. are generated from waste.
That's astounding.
And the average climate action plan done by cities finds that about 10 to 20% of all the things that they can do to address climate change are attributable to zero waste and waste management recycling programs. And zero waste acts quicker and more efficiently to have immediate impact. In Fort Collins, they reported early on that over half of their reductions in greenhouse gases were coming from their zero waste initiatives. So it's really important to look at those connections with climate change. Zero waste is a huge contributor to solving those problems.
It is, and I had not heard those numbers before, but it is a big lever in terms of that people need to know more about. It appears, too, from what you all are saying and from what I can put together, too, that waste is one of those environmental issues that all of us have the ability to make perhaps a bigger or one of the biggest impacts on. You know, many people think, oh, there's not much we can do about environment. This is one, and a big one.
I think you make a good point, because we're all dealing with it every day, right? You know, we don't necessarily have control over fuel switching in our electric grid, right? you know, we have less impact on other kinds of green, you know, transportation infrastructure, you know, transit. That's hard for an individual to make a difference in, but we all can do zero waste. We can all do waste reduction for sure.
Indeed. And we hope to end this show with people knowing why it's important to do that and what's in it for them. So I want to move to you, Gary, now. Can you talk to us a little bit, though, about how waste and waste management are connected to our economy? Let's talk about pocketbooks.
Sure. In your introduction, you highlighted a lot of the benefits of creating jobs, saving money, improving health and well-being, having valuable resources to create new business opportunities. Those are all really important. Just some examples of that. Reuse businesses, nonprofits create 250 times the number of jobs compared to burning or burying those resources. It reinvests the resources in the local economy, which has a huge exponential effect on those resources contributing to the local economy. And it helps make life more affordable. One in seven households doesn't know where their next meal is coming from. At the same time, then over 40% of food in America is wasted. So we need to connect the dots. That's what Zero Waste is helping to set up the systems to connect the dots to get the food to those who need it. And the same thing's true with low-cost clothing and building materials. There's so much in our economy that could be reused and repaired and fixed. Zero Waste is trying to get those types of programs supported more and expanded so that we can get by with less stuff and make it last longer.
Is there any statistic or estimates out there about savings, consumer savings, for example, you know, per capita? Each of us in the United States might be able to save X number of dollars if we practice zero waste. Or are there any numbers or estimates or guesstimates out there about that?
Yeah, on an individual basis, I'm not sure that we have that estimate yet. Okay. Because it's really it's about the household and what we choose to do every day. I think that in many communities, they do have a pay as you throw approach to discarding. So if you have a smaller garbage can, you will reduce your the amount of money that you're throwing away every day, every month. And then of course, with more mindful practices of purchasing, there's an opportunity to save. I don't think we have a statistics for exactly how much everybody could do, but you know, those extreme zero wasters mm-hmm. are hardly spending any money and spending any money on throwing things away.
Yeah, I would say that in those pay-as-you-throw communities, like in Northern California, they have what's called a linear rate structure. So every can costs the same as the next can. So each time you can avoid paying for an extra can, you're saving that amount of money. In my town of Loomis, when I was mayor, I negotiated with our garbage company a 40% discount if people recycled, composted, and provided their own 32-gallon can instead of the 90-gallon card that the garbage company provided. And that's the order of magnitude of savings that are realized in many communities that are doing the pay-as-you-throw. Pay-as-you-throw is being done in over 10,000 communities around the country. So it is definitely one of the trends moving forward that if people see that it costs them more to throw stuff away, they'll think twice about it, and not only think about throwing it away instead of recycling it, but they'll also think about not buying stuff that will be wasteful to begin with.
And Ruth, you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. I think in many cases, businesses are leading the way to zero waste. And I wanted to ask Gary to talk a little bit about that. So we may not be able to quantify across the country on a household basis, but tell us a little bit, Gary, about how zero waste businesses are saving money.
Every zero waste business we've worked with has saved money. They save the most by eliminating wasteful practices, by redesigning, rethinking, getting rid of stuff One of the businesses specified what type of boxes their raw materials come in so they can use that same box to ship their product out. So it's all about efficiency for businesses. Reuse systems save a lot of money. Toyota reported saving $1 billion over 10 years by shifting to reusable metal containers to get their parts in to build their cars. General Motors saves $1 billion a year by achieving over 97% diversion from over 100 facilities worldwide. So those are some examples of businesses. They save the most by redesign and eliminating and reducing. Saves a bunch through reuse. And then they can save money from recycling and composting, depending on how the rates are structured in a community to provide savings if people recycle more.
And I have to wonder, I know there are some standard things that are given to us as consumers to do to get to zero waste, but it sounds like to me, too, that there may be a way to maybe extract some of those really profitable things businesses are doing and rephrase them or revise them to the consumer level and then put a price on it. And that may make a difference as well. We're going to go to break right now, but we will be back on the other side with Ruth Abbey and Gary Liss with Zero Waste USA, and they are making us smarter. Thank you all. We'll be right back. We want to give a shout out now to our sponsors. That is Natural Awakenings, Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex Magazine, The Green, Healthy, and Sustainable Living Authority for the DFW Metroplex and North Texas communities. Print issues of Natural Awakenings can be found in all HEB stores, natural grocers, central markets, sunflower shops, and many, many other locations, as well as available free for download online at nadallas.com. Check them out. Our other sponsor is North Haven Gardens, serving the Metroplex since 1951, the most respected horticultural establishment in North Texas, offering gardening and plant education, concierge services, DIY classes, gifts, and more, and we are told the best Christmas trees in Texas. Our other sponsor is Lynn Dental Care, practicing dentistry for over 40 years with a holistic approach, non-mercury, looking at the whole body. Specializing in periodontics, Dr. Lynn is board certified by the International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology. Check them out at LynnDentalCare.com. Thank you, sponsors. Welcome back to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio today. To our show today on waste and waste management, focusing in on zero waste and the economics of waste and waste management. And we are back with Ruth Abbey and Gary Liss with Zero Waste USA, and they are making us smarter. I want to go to you now, Ruth. What are some examples of the externalized cost of waste and waste management that are not reflected in the garbage pickup fees, and how do they affect our health and our climate?
I think we can recognize that those are extractive industries, and in fact, there are federal government subsidies for companies to go into our national forests and cut down our trees and to mine and manufacture the materials that are important for our everyday living. However, we're being wasteful about them. So those externalized costs that we do not see are all of those upstream, what we call upstream costs. In mining, in manufacturing, all of those costs have consequences to our environment that we don't pay for through our garbage fees or necessarily even the products that we buy in the store. So I would say that is the invisible part of, you know, there's something that we use in zero waste circles called the wasteberg. And because this is radio, I can't really show you an image, but if you can think of the idea of a iceberg, right? Mm-hmm. The top is tiny compared to the bottom. Well, we always think about that tippy top of the wasteberg, meaning the waste we see every day, the trash in our trash cans. But below the surface of that waste, Berg, is all that mining, manufacturing, and extraction waste that we do not see and we do not take into account and is not included in the cost of our products and packaging. So that would be some of the concerns that I would have that we just don't see every day.
And Gary, I want to ask you if you are aware of any, well, I know you're, as a zero waste advocate and professional, you're aware of the emerging trends for zero waste. And the other question is, was there any discussion about zero waste at the recent COP28?
There's a lot of the emerging trends. I would say that one of the most important ones right at this moment in time is the amount of federal funding available to support zero waste facilities, services, programs, even development of policies. There's literally billions of dollars available right now from a variety of federal agencies to support new programs, and we're encouraging everyone to ask about, are we getting that federal money in for our programs locally? Because it's being organized through communities as the primary vehicle for developing new programs. So businesses and nonprofits can work with their communities to apply for the federal funding. But it's right now really important to focus on that. There's also the huge work being done on a global plastics treaty. I'd say that the one of the major outcomes of COP28, the commitment of 200 countries worldwide to reduce the use of fossil fuels is right in sync with what zero waste is all about, to stop burning. We're trying to stop burning because of the impacts on the environment and our health that we're talking about. And the burning of the fossil fuels is a really key part of that. And so I'd say that COP28 has accomplished raising the bar on what we need to be thinking about. I'd also like to highlight the United Nations has, for the first time, declared an International Day of Zero Waste. That's March 30th. This is the first year that that was done, and the Zero Waste International Alliance and the Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives were both invited to speak to the General Assembly in New York in March of this year. Rick Anthony said it was one of the highlights of his career to tell them what zero waste is and to encourage them to pursue it. And then 70-plus countries told what they were doing at the General Assembly to achieve those goals. And it was all catalyzed by the First Lady of Turkey, formerly known as Turkey, who championed that and got the UN to support a resolution creating the International Day of Zero Waste. So those are some really exciting trends that zero waste is catching on. And when you combine it with circular economy, sustainability, climate pollution reduction, these are all moving in the same direction to have a healthier planet, as you call for in your show.
So does Zero Waste USA have, or are you going to have, like a Zero Waste Day?
Yeah, we definitely will encourage folks to celebrate the March 30th Day, International Day of Zero Waste. The UN has made a commitment that they will celebrate that day every year. And so we want to amplify and support that day. In addition to that, in the worldwide movement of zero waste, we do have Zero Waste Week, Zero Waste Month, and that's different in different countries around the world. In the San Francisco Bay Area, they celebrate Zero Waste Week in March. In our colleagues at Race to Zero Waste, which is another national nonprofit in the U.S., celebrates Zero Waste Month in October. And we support all of these organizations in celebrating and promoting zero waste, amplifying their messaging.
And other days are good to celebrate it, too. There's Earth Day has always been celebrating reduce, reuse, and recycle activities, and zero waste certainly could be part of those. World Environment Day, June 5th. is another opportunity. And America Recycles Day, November 15th, are all great times to get the message out about zero waste. In working to implement new programs and getting people to change their behavior, we've heard studies that say you need to let people know 7 to 15 times before they actually change their behavior, and from different sources. So the more times a year that we focus on the opportunities for zero waste, the better. So whichever day works for you, use it locally to promote zero waste.
Indeed. I love that concept. Because, again, it's something that's doable for everybody. And I think because it's doable, it will stick perhaps with people more so. You know, if they're celebrating and they have some type of competition for a zero waste day, then they see it's something they can do tomorrow, the next day, and the next day without too much impact on their lives. So I like that and certainly plan to push that. I want to ask you, too, Ruth, are we able yet to make any kind of reasonable estimates or guesstimates about achievements from the investments, the massive investments being made in our country's environmental future by way of the Inflation Reduction Act? I know it's a lot out there, and I know it may be too early.
We know that it will have an exponential effect. So Zero Waste USA is part of a consortium of national nonprofits, including the National Recycling Coalition and Institute for Local Self-Reliance, that are promoting and activating communities to be involved in recognizing the opportunities here. I want to kick it over to Gary, who is kind of heading up that effort, to talk a little bit more about the connection and the real opportunity that we have in the next couple of months to influence those impacts in our community.
What Ruth is referring to is that we have a new campaign called the CPR campaign to resuscitate the climate and stop trashing it. And that's all related to a play on words of regarding the Climate Pollution Reduction Grants, the CPR grants, that are $4.6 billion that are coming up for a notice of funding opportunities that people can apply for by April 1 of 2024. There's a whole bunch of steps along the way in order to get that new system in place, which includes state and local climate action plans and making sure that zero waste projects are included in those climate action plans, so they'll be eligible for the $4.6 billion of federal funding coming through this particular grant program. So the CPR campaign is being launched. We're asking those who are leaders in zero waste, in reuse, in recycling, and composting to pay attention. This is the biggest funding possibility ever. In terms of the outcomes from the grant programs, I think it's too early to say what they have been. But all over the country, projects are being announced, from the citywide reuse system in Hawaii to major composting facilities in Baltimore. All over the country, these programs are being announced that have been awarded. It'll take probably a year or two for all those to show their achievements.
Sounds good. Last word to Ruth, and then we're out of here. Ruth?
Okay. I was hoping that we could talk a little bit more about EPA's emphasis and on environmental justice communities and the amount of money that is going to be offered specifically to those grassroots organizations, and also the technical assistance available through the EJ Tic Tacs. And Gary, maybe you could just tell us what an EJ Tic Tac is and how to find them.
Thriving Community Technical Assistance Centers. Just Google that phrase.
Okay, got it. Thriving Communities Technical Assistance. Thank you all so much. You really have given us a lot of information and a lot of incentive. And thank you. We've been with Gary Lisk and Ruth Abbey with Zero Waste USA. Thank you all so much. You've made us smarter. And thank you, listeners, for listening in today to Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. The conversation starts here, but it is our goal for it to continue in your home, in your social circles, in your workplaces, at the water cooler, and in the grocery checkout line, so that we can all work together to realize that healthy living is simply not possible without a healthy planet. Our culture is a result of a trillion tiny acts taken by billions of people every day like yourselves. And each of them can seem significant, but all of those tiny acts add up one way or the other to the change that we each live through. This is your host, Bernice Butler. Thank you for listening today and listen in again next week for more Healthy Living, Healthy Planet Radio. Thank you.